2-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager! That just happened! Thank you very much!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome back once again to the official podcast of the Seattle Mariners. Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill back with you. Boy, it's good to be back. It's been a while. I've missed you. Got to be honest, I didn't think it would be this long in between, but here we are. And there is so much to get to. In fact, there's just no way we're going to get to it all in this one. So here's the way I see it going here. First of all, thrilled to be here. It's been a while. Happy to say that the podcast is back. I'm back. Podcast is ready to go for this upcoming season. So I guess you can consider this the opener for 2015. How about that? We're not going to be on a daily basis yet. We'll ramp up. What's exciting is I think we'll knock off a few before the end of December. Then we get into January, the new year. And January, you can start saying, yeah, next month, pitchers and catchers report. So we'll ramp up and churn out more and more as we get closer to pitchers and catchers and spring training and everything else. Well, there's a lot to catch up on. There's a ton, as you know, that's happened. And we won't do it all today. We'll do some, and then we'll get to all the other stuff that's gone on between, you know, Kyle Seager and his contract, Nelson Cruz, Jay Happ, and, you know, a lot that I want to cover, too, about the division, taking a look at the other teams. We'll spend time delving into what the A's have done, what the Rangers haven't done, what the Angels have done, and of course what the Astros have done, their bullpen, everything else. So there's just a massive amount to cover moving forward. And I think in this one, what we'll do, we'll start out with Kyle Seager. I am pumped about that deal. Also, I haven't said my piece on Felix Hernandez and the Cy Young Award. I know that was a few weeks ago now, but we'll get to that too at some point. And I still have some questions that I've actually answered some. I have some ready to go. I have some still left to research and do, so we'll have that coming as well. So, yeah, here we go. Here we go. We're back. So in this one, I think what we'll do is we'll touch on Seager a little bit. I'm pumped about Seager and his deal being locked up for 7 years. I think that's exciting for him. It's exciting for the Mariners. It's a win-win, really, all the way around. And you know how I celebrate things. So, montage. Kyle Seager montage is coming. You get some snippets from his press conference, some of his highlights for the last couple of years. So that's on its way. Also, we'll get some thoughts from Mike Blowers, Rick Riz, and Shannon Dreher on Kyle Seager from the Hot Stove Show. And also, we'll get a long-form interview with general manager Jack Sorensic as well. So I think that's a good place to start. I guess we'll call this the return. So that's where we're at. A couple of things about Kyle Seager before we really get into it. We'll get more in depth with Seager too. I think this is an exciting signing for the M's for a number of reasons. One, homegrown player. You keep your own player home, but I think he's a guy that has not reached his ceiling yet. You know, in his mid-20s, just entering his prime. I think the best baseball for Kyle Seager is yet to come. We've seen him and his strides he's taken defensively. Gold Glove Award last year, which is awfully impressive. I was looking at his last 3 years. You know, I still think, despite the All-Star appearance, despite the Gold Glove, still a little underrated, although that's beginning to melt away a little bit as I think the baseball world is really catching on. But you look at the last 3 years compared to other third basemen in baseball, and I'm talking about guys that are third basemen, 75% of their games or more at third base the last 3 years. And he's had the most plate appearances of any third baseman in baseball, with 2,000, ahead of Beltre, 1958, ahead of Headley, who was third at 1830. He's played the most games the past 3 years, 474. I mean, talk about durability. And his age, I mean, 24 to 26 years, just entering his prime. You know, 67 home runs in that stretch. That's the fourth most of any third baseman. You know, behind Beltre, Alvarez, Longoria. Doubles, He's racked up tied for the second most, Beltre with 98, and then Seager and David Wright with 94, tied for second on that list. I mean, 262 batting average, and you can see, you can watch the kind of hitter he is and project that to climb as his career continues. 434 slugging, 764 OPS. I mean, I just think the best baseball for Kyle Seager is on its way. And still, you compare what he's done to the third baseman, and it's awfully impressive. It's an interesting position as we sit right now, because it's not very deep in terms of stars at third base in Major League Baseball. I mean, it looked like Manny Machado, when he burst onto the scene, was going to be that guy. And of course, he had that gruesome injury. We'll see as his career goes. Arenado from Colorado appears to have a bright future. You don't know how that's going to work out. Moustakas from the Royals has been another guy to watch, but where is he at this point? And then you kind of have the old guard, you know, with Beltre, David Wright, Ramirez to a degree as well. And then Ryan Zimmerman, you could almost put in that category, maybe the tier after that. And, of course, Pablo Sandoval and some other guys in the mix, like Josh Donaldson, guys like that around Seager's age. But, I asked the question a couple years ago, what third baseman would you want for the next 5 years, and where would Kyle Seager fit into that mix? And I had him awfully high. I mean, 1, 2, 3. And I think it's an interesting question to ask right now. As we sit right now, I mean, you look around the league, guys like Evan Longoria, guys like that. Is there anyone playing third base right now that you'd want for the next 5 years over Kyle Seager? I think it's a pretty interesting question when you consider what he's already accomplished and where he is at age-wise and where he can go in comparison to some of the other third basemen around. I think it's a pretty interesting question. Maybe we'll bat that around as we move forward. But I'm not the only one excited about Kyle Seager and his deal. He's going to be a Mariner for a long, long time. Here's a snippet from the conversation between Shannon Dreyer, Rick Riz, and Mike Bowers about Kyle Seager.
How about Kyle Seager? I mean, that was the deal. I had a good feeling that something would happen there. 7 years. I mean, that's a huge commitment on both sides. And that was great to see that Kyle wanted to be there for 7 years. The Mariners could make that happen. And boy, that's just 7 years of Kyle Seager, to me, is phenomenal.
Well, I think, Shannon, Rick, you both know that I'm probably his biggest fan. And having played the position myself, I appreciate everything that he has done. And what a year he's had with the All-Star, winning the Gold Glove, and just the consistency at which he played. I think it sends a great message, too, to all the young players in the organization.
Yeah.
Kyle signing that deal, look, you put the work in, you be a consistently good major league player, and you're going to get rewarded here with this organization. I thought it was a great message for everybody, and I'm thrilled for Kyle.
I think it says so much about the kid, Kyle Seager, and his work ethic. Jack in the front office and Lloyd McClendon, they know what type of kid that he is. As a matter of fact, when Lloyd made the phone call, I guess he couldn't take the phone call because he was changing a diaper. So, I mean, this guy is involved in everything, whether it's at home, inside the clubhouse, Jack on the field. We'll get with Jack in a second. But it just says a lot about, you know, who he is as a person, what he means to the organization, to his teammates, and how good he is, Mike.
Well,
I mean, you played third base.
Yeah, no, I was happy, again, to see him win the award because I felt like last year even, I thought he was really good. And this year I just wanted to make sure that people appreciated the type of defender that he has become at third base. And he's one of the top two guys playing at that position for me. And when I get to watch him every day, a lot of the stuff that he makes look routine, I know those are difficult plays.
Right.
He has such good hands. And I think about Kyle, and I know, Shannon, you and I talked about him early in the season back in April when he got off such a slow start. And there were a lot of people that were concerned about Kyle, and I didn't even blink at it. He's going to be fine with the way that this kid works and goes about his business, his attitude, and just, you know, the way he consistently comes to the ballpark on a daily basis and doesn't change his routines. I just knew he was going to be fine and ended up having his best season.
April 28th. Home run, two home runs against the Houston Astros, the walk-off home run, all of a sudden.
Turned his year around and the Mariners, by the way.
That was the date. Things turned around on a dime.
Yeah, exciting times, no doubt about it. And, you know, to get us right back in the podcast groove, I have a montage right out of the gates. So here we go. Here's a little Kyle Seager. Enjoy.
We're here to announce the signing of Kyle Seager. I think it's a great moment for the organization, a great moment for Kyle.
And the pitch to Kyle, swing and a high drive, deep to right field. Springer going back, looking up. Goodbye, baseball! A walk-off three-run home run. Kyle Seager, his second of the ball game. He drives in all five Mariner runs. Mariners come back and win it. Holy smokes, they win it. 5-3 over the Astros.
I think when you look at a person that has exemplified the hard work and class, I don't think there's any question that Kyle falls into those categories.
Here's the pitch home. Kyle swings, drives it right field. Could this be happening? Rios looks up. It's gone! Kyle Seager! That just happened!
It's wonderful to have a homegrown player rewarded. He's worked very hard to get where he is today, and the entire organization, and I know our entire city, is very proud of what Kyle's accomplished.
And the pitch, one on ground ball, diving snap at third, Seager got it, second one, Pinot's relay, holy smokes, what a double play. Kyle Seager diving to his left on the one-hopper, robbing Adam Jones of a hit, and he turns it into a double play. They get Markakis at second and double up Jones at first base, 5-4-3, and folks, that's one of the prettiest double plays you will see.
Me and my wife are so excited to be here. You know, everybody's, you know, treated us so well and, you know, made us feel at home, and, you know, the whole city and, you know, everybody from, you know, top to the bottom in the organization has just been unbelievably good to us. And, you know, me and my wife love the city, and we're just extremely excited and thankful.
And the 1-0 pitch to Seager. Swing and a drive. Deep to right field. Down the line. It is gone off the windows of the Hit It Here Cafe. Kyle Seager with a three-run blast with two outs. And the Mariners, holy smoke, the Mariners have the lead. 6-3 here in the bottom of the eighth inning. Seager's second home run of the game in his second consecutive at-bat. He does it again. Wow.
The one thing about Kyle that's really impressive, and this is why I know this contract is right, is because he's not motivated by money. He's motivated to be the best player that he can be. And as a manager, that's a treasure to have a guy like that. So well-deserved, and congratulations.
Lesker comes home, swinging a high rocket right field. This sends Reddick chasing it back onto the warning track. Reddick looks up, and it's out of the stairwell for a home run. Kyle Seager knots this game up. One apiece of the seventh, 22nd home run of the season. That ties a single season career high, and it could not have come at a better time for Kyle Seager.
Defense is a commitment. You can get better if you'll commit. And I think this is what you've seen here. For this guy to win a Gold Glove this year, he's committed to the position. He's taken leaps and bounds.
Swinging a ground ball a little wide up third. Diving stop. Kyle Seager gets up. Toss across. Got him. Holy smokes. What a play by Kyle Seager.
Bunt attempt. Third base side. Charging Seager. Runs in. Bare hands. Throws the first, and he got him.
Swing a line drive. Caught at third by Seager. Kyle Seager with a quick reach to his right. Takes a double away from Michael Bourne. Swinging a line drive. What a catch by Seager at third. Holy smokes, high in the air, reaching up to his left. Second outstanding play by Kyle Seager.
He's committed to what he, you know, what he wants to accomplish, and I'm really extremely proud of him. If you guys could come out at our 4 o'clock hour and really watch him get after it, it's pretty damn good. And what this has done is, you know, I've always told my players, don't ever put the cart before the horse. And this is the results of the hard work and the dedication that he's put in.
3-2. Swing, drive, right field, gone. This is a bomb from Seager, and it's off the glass of the Hit It Here Cafe.
From my perspective, this takes away a lot of stresses outside of the baseball field. You know, this gives me and my family a lot of, you know, security away from the field. But, you know, for on the field, this just makes it, you know, that much better, and this just helps for what we've been building for. This is all about, you know, winning. You don't have to worry about any of the other stuff. You're just, you know, focused on winning.
Okay, and now, hope you enjoyed that. That was fun to put that together. It's been a while. felt a little rusty, but knocked off the rust. So here we go. I think we'll turn to Jack Sorensic now. I think as we set the base moving forward, I think this is a good place to start. A nice long conversation between Mike Blowers and Shannon Dreher and Rick Riz with the general manager, Jack Sorensic. This from the Hot Stove show that you'll hear more to as we move into January after the holidays and after the new year starts. But I think this is a good place to start on the podcast is we'll go with Jack Sorensic and talking about all things Mariners. Here it is.
Rick Riz, along with Mike Blower, Shannon Dreher, and our very special guest, one of the busiest guys in baseball, Jack Sorensic, Mariners GM. And Jack, congratulations. It was an interesting 4 or 5 days down in San Diego. You got a lot of work done prior to the winter meetings, a lot of face-to-face time with the other GMs and agents. Tell us a little bit about what went on over the last 4 or 5 days for you in San Diego.
Well, it was great. You know, in San Diego, how could it not be? The weather was phenomenal, and you know, it was a lot of fun. We did a few big splashes before we got there, so I kind of felt it was going to be a little bit slow. But we did have a chance to get face to face with a lot of GMs, just about everyone in baseball, as well as several agents, and did a lot of groundwork. I think we were in a position where we just needed to be patient for some things to happen. And, you know, so we're still in the process of maybe developing some things.
Jack, it seems like there was a lot of talk about the pitching market and how that was all dependent on John Lester. And not as much made about the outfield market. But when you have free agents available, you had a number of teams that were saying they might make somebody available or they could keep them. It would seem that that market has almost been as kind of stymied as the pitching market was for a long time.
You know, and the big thing, we had talked to everyone, you know, talked to all the clubs that had outfielders available. The one challenge for us is that, you know, when you're taking on a one-year player, which there are a few available, which you can have, they're pretty good players. You know, you're taking on 1 year, you're taking on a reasonably healthy contract, and you are going to give up multiple players. And I think that was the one thing that was really a negative for us, you know, quite frankly. And one particular player who we did like did not have a first-round pick attached to him, you know. So if you would have even gone down that road, and a year from now he plays for you for 1 year, and that's great. But then you've given up three players, and, you know, you've kind of cut into your future. I think you could do it in the right scenario. I didn't think it was right for us at this time.
Why now? You and I have talked a lot over the last few years and developing the young players and moving this thing along, and obviously the club. I know we even talked last year when the club was having success and doing well, and you told me at one point, don't be fooled by it. You have to look at all the outside things that are going on. So why now? Spend some money.
Yeah, we did. You know, and I think a lot had to do with the fact that the young kids are starting to mature. I think we saw that last year. I think our pitching is in place. Our bullpen obviously was really good last year. So I think when you start saying you have your bullpen, you have starting pitchers, you know, why not go out and add to it? And we did that. You know, I think by extending Kyle, by going out and bringing in Nelson Cruz, now you have your Seegers, you have your Ackleys, you have your other group of players, and, you know, they're going to be a year older. They'll be a year more mature, and you know better than anybody, Mike, boy, what 1 year means to a player. And I think what we're going to see is continued development of our young kids. We saw the step from 13 to 14. If we see the same thing from 14 to 15, as well as the additions and, you know, the consistency of our pitching, I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Does it create a sense of urgency? You talked about the bullpen, and you have Felix at the top of your rotation. Because of that pitching, a sense of urgency to try to get something done now because of that window that we all see?
Well, you know, there's a nice window because you have the Felix and you have Iwakuma. But then you have this window behind them that is pretty good, too. You know, when you talk about Paxton, you talk about Walker, you talk about Lilius, you're talking about, a healthy Danny Holtzen. You know, so, and, you know, we add the addition to J.A. Happ. So, you know, we hope this window continues. You know, we don't want this window just to be now. And, of course, we got some great players right now with Felix and Cano, you know. But you want this thing to continue, and I think that's the thing we're trying to do, is keep this thing going for years to come.
With the trade of Michael Saunders, you're looking for somebody to go out there and, and play right field. You got some options there, and there's guys that are, of course, still available. We hear about Melky Cabrera and also Alex Rios, and you got some young kids, you know, in this organization as well. What's going on that front, and what can you say about it?
Well, Rick, here's exactly what we're going to do.
Hold on, let me take notes.
You know, how close are you?
You know, Rick, I think, you know, we might get a little bit creative in that regard. Every club in baseball works under a budget, you know, and I think we're, you know, to a point where we did some things. It's kind of like an uncommon, nobody wants to hear it, but it's the reality of it.
Right.
You know, you're working within a budget. You have to do the best you can within your dollars that you're allotted. And from going into last season, the dollars were increased. They're increased again this year. We wouldn't have been able to do what we did if we didn't have a bigger budget. It'll continue
right.
to go forward. But I think the reality is we're going to look at options, but at the end of the day, you know, we may be in a position where we get creative as opposed to making a second big splash or third big splash, however you view it.
Jack, I think you're not very much, you're kind of a never say never guy up to a point. And with everything that you've seen developed, how close are you to saying we're not touching the pitching?
Our pitching?
Your pitching.
I don't really, I mean, and that's, thank you for asking that, because there was something written this week that kind of got under my crawl a little bit. It really did. It really agitated me. Because, and I see it so often, you know, there's names we're attached to. There's just not any truth to it. I don't even know where it comes from sometimes. And then, you know, that we're disappointed in one of our pitchers. That's not true. You know, it isn't. It's not true at all. You know, Taiwan Walker is a guy that was written about, I don't have intentions of moving Taiwan Walker. I don't want to move James Paxton. You know, I'm not going to move Iwakuma. That was written about early in the year. We're not trading Felix, you know, so, and nor can we. He's got a new trade now, thank God. But, you know, I don't get any phone calls anymore. It's a wonder, right? But, you know, so we're going to hold on to these guys. Now, could we do something in the right scenario? Of course, we would be open. But there is no way am I out there trying to move any of these young guys to try to do something, you know, for a short term. I'm not going to do that. It's not the best for this organization.
You mentioned the bullpen, and we can look back at it now, but Fernando Rodney, what did he mean not only for the club, but for all the other guys that are out in that pen?
And that's right there is a home run, because I remember last year when we were talking about Fernando Rodney, you know, there were those that were like, yeah, bullpen guy, you got to be kidding me, you know. Well, we all felt that if we were going to bring a guy in to be your back end save guy, that it would move everybody up. Now you have guys that did it, like Wilhelmsen and guys like Farquhar, as well as these other talented young arms. It was just putting them in a really domino effect downward, which just created a really, really good bullpen. The fact that he came in and saved 48 games, and I think every other guy in that bullpen. It was interesting last year. I think you can pressure situations in the seventh and eighth inning of a ball game are pressure situations.
Right.
The ninth inning is a different animal completely. But you can look back on it now and say there were guys who were comfortable coming in the seventh. There were guys who were comfortable coming in the eighth. If we didn't have Fernando Rodney, I'm not so sure those guys would have been quite as comfortable coming in the ninth inning of a ball game. And I think that was the big, it was a big key to our success, is what how he allowed the rest of the bullpen to function as strongly as they did.
And Jack, of course, the big news was Nelson Cruz a few weeks ago, and he fits so nicely for what your ball club really needed to help beef up the offensive side of the team. So good pitching-wise and defense and catching the ball. Tell me a little bit about how that went down to be able to sign a guy like Nelson Cruz, who led Major League Baseball in home runs last year and fourth in RBIs.
Well, we had a lot of dialogue last year and just never came together. But when he went out and performed the way he performed this year and he went on the free agent market, immediately we made a phone call and said, we'd be interested in having him come to Seattle. So he has a very good relationship with Robinson Cano, so that's no secret that he and Robinson talk a lot. I think you look at Fernando Rodney, the three of them on a WBC team together that won at Dominican Republic. So, there was interest here. And then, actually, this was somewhat flattering. When we went to the GM meetings, he actually came to the GM meetings, stayed in a separate hotel, and we had this dialogue going on before we got there. And as soon as we got to our hotel room, checked in, we got a phone call from them. You know, you guys are here, we're here. Come on over to our hotel. So we took a cab, went to where they were staying. Nelson was present. So we met with his Fern Kuza, the one agent, Nelson Cruz, and the second agent, and we had a very good discussion. I think, you know, he was a little confused about what happened last year. You know, we got through that right away within 3 or 4 minutes. I thought he was really relaxed. I later found out we were the first team that he wanted to sit down and talk to, which I thought was really neat, you know. So, you know, when you hear about people not wanting to come to Seattle, that this is such a challenging place to play. And after we ended up signing him, you know, the agent said to me, he goes, you know, he met with several clubs, and there was a lot of dialogue going on. You were the first team he wanted to meet with. You guys made such an impression, and you kept it going. And as a result, we ended up bringing him on board.
It's interesting when you get a player of that caliber, what he can do for your entire lineup. I mean, thinking about Cano hitting third, and now Kyle actually can drop down and hit fifth. It's an interesting look now to that lineup.
Or second, you know, I mean,
yeah,
depending,
second,
on how, yeah,
sure.
Depending on how the whole thing, Lloyd and I have a lot of discussions about that. But, you know, it is true. And I was watching the MLB channel, and one of the ex-Major League players said, I think it was John Schmoltz, said one player changes a lineup. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we saw that with Robinson last year. I think we saw it with Fernando in the bullpen. Hopefully the second edition this year will have that same effect. And, you know, he's a great guy. He went through something that he's not real proud of, but he's owned up to it. And when you get to know him, he's a neat guy.
Jack, what was it like? You're at the winter meetings, and all of a sudden, that last day, that last, like, 12 hours, all of these deals start happening, and the Dodgers just kind of go berserk. What goes on with you guys? You're in your suite. You're holding your deal. How do you learn about that, and what was the atmosphere like in that last day?
You know, honestly, it was no different than us sitting here. You know, I mean, we knew things were going to happen. We knew a lot of the stuff that was going on because we were had a lot of discussions with a lot of the clubs. We kind of had a feeling, you know, some of it you don't know, you know, the money that exchanged hands or the extra players get put in. But you kind of have an idea what's going on. And I kept telling our guys, you know, we may be here and we may not. It seems like every year there's a club. All of a sudden, there's a flavor of the day. You know, you can go back to when Anaheim did it with Pujols and years ago when Texas did it with A-Rod. You know, and you go on and on and on, and it just seems like there's always this. And this year, it took on more. You know, there were several clubs that did it, you know, that were involved in this. But I kept saying to our guys, you know, we made a splash before we got here, if you will, if you want to call an acquisition
that's a splash.
Yeah, we made a trade, and we're going to be patient through this. We're not going to be forced to be rushed in. And I said, even when I was down there every day when I met with our media people, there's this crescendo that is a false crescendo. You're at the winter meetings, and the, boy, this pinnacle comes on the, you know, Wednesday or Thursday. If you don't do a deal, you had a bad winter meeting. What does that mean? You had a bad winter meeting. If we do a deal tomorrow, it will be successful. If we do a deal 3 weeks from now, it could be very successful. So you have to avoid that. You have to avoid the rush to your people there and the national media all around and say common sense has to prevail. We have to do the right thing for our ball club.
Yeah, I mean, if you did Happ and Cruz and Seager during that 4 day period, all of a sudden it's totally opposite. A lot of times at the winter meetings over the last many years, it's waiting for the shoe to drop on a free agent. A lot of times it's waiting for the free agents to sign, then the trades. But this year there was a lot of wheeling and dealing. Tell me a little bit about you know, the way you saw a lot of trading going on, you know, players for players and not so much all the time for prospects, because there was a lot of deals.
And it's interesting because I think when you're on the outside looking in, you view this thing as a surprise. When you're on the inside, you kind of get an inside. You understand this guy's going to be moved. This guy's going to be moved. This guy's going to be signed. This guy's going to be signed. You have an idea where he's going. You don't know exactly. None of us do. But you know, so when it happens, you're almost like, yeah, I figured that Cespedes was going to get moved. Yeah, I figured that Lester was going to sign some, you know, one of these clubs. So it doesn't shock you, I think, as much. Now, sometimes you will get shocked. You know, there's no question. There'll be surprises. You know, us signing Cano last year, I think, was a big shock, you know, to most people. But I think that overall, you know, you're in the middle of it. So you're kind of, you're in a battlefield, if you will, and you're watching all the, you know, the Minutemen fight, you know, and then finally somebody pulls the trigger and you get a deal done. So, you know, I think for us it's like, okay, they did that. Now that will trigger something else.
Yeah. You mentioned somebody earlier, Danny Holtzman. Rough year last year. Where is he at right now? What are your expectations when he gets to spring training? Is he going to be able to help this ball club this year?
You know, if he does, I don't think it'll be early. I don't think it's fair to Danny. Positive is he ended up really good in pitching well, even though it was a short stint in instructional league. We got him into two ball games down there. The staff that worked there with him did a great job. He's very confident right now. He feels really good about himself. Throwing 90 miles an hour, you know, got a nice breaking ball changeup. Had a chance to step back, work on his delivery, release points, all these little things, you know, the nuances of pitching. And we talked about the fall league, but we thought, let's not push this. Let him go home, clear his head. It's been a whole year of a rehab, you know, and he's excited about coming into spring training and showing us what he is. But he does have to build up innings. Do I expect him to be on a club? I think that'd be a huge, huge challenge for him and for us, and it's not the best thing. So we'll be patient. At the end, if he continues on this road to health, which he's apparently he is now, it'll be a good thing for all of us.
Can you talk about Kyle and getting that deal done? Seven years, long time, and you know, well, and a lot of money, but I'd like to hear you talk about Kyle and why you decided to go that route.
You know, I think you know your own better than anybody else. You know, and I think when you look at, you know, we took Nelson Cruz and tied into a nice contract for Nelson Cruz at the age of 34. You know, we did this a year ago with Robinson Cano at his age. Now you look at Kyle, he's 27. So by the time he's 34, you know, he's getting at the end of this deal, you know, he's still got time ahead of him. So, and you look at where the dollars are going, the security for him and his family, $100 million, pretty impressive. You know, but, and you know, you, Mike, was told me right off the bat the first time you saw Kyle. I remember you and I talked many times. You said, this kid's going to be a good player. This kid's going to be a good hitter. And you were right. You know, I mean, we all thought that. But, I mean, you saw it and you recognized it. You know the position well. But he deserved it. This kid is salt of the earth, superhuman being, great family guy, great representative of our city and our ball club. If you're going to reward somebody, I can't think of a better guy to reward than Kyle Seager.
Jack, you mentioned earlier that you could get creative with your needs in the outfield right now. How creative could you get? You've said before you'd like to add a piece.
Yeah.
Has the prospect of that changed at all in the last 2 weeks? That's still the focus right now. How confident are you can do that, and what do you do if you don't?
Well, if we don't, we don't. No, but we will.
Just trying.
Yeah, no, I think, Shannon, here's what we want to do, and exactly how we're going to do it. You know, no, we have dialogue going now. I think we have some pretty interesting discussions going. You know, it may not be the splash that everybody's hoping for or waiting for, but I do think it'll be pieces that'll help the club. We could put a couple together. We could do something via trade. We could do something, you know, maybe one or two pieces on a free agent market to kind of give you a little different flavor. So, you know, at the end, it gets down to their desire to come here if it's a free agent, the dollars that you have to spend, and the position available for what you're trying to accomplish. So I feel confident we'll get something done. I think we'll probably do more than one thing.
Visiting with Mariners GM Jack Cirencic. Jack, you can't have enough pitching. And tell us a little bit about J-Hap. 11-11 last year with the Toronto Blue Jays, coming over in the trade for Michael Saunders with a 4.22 ERA. Who is J-Hap?
Well, first of all, you know, we're really appreciative of everything that Michael did for the organization. He was here a long time, you know, and it's a hard, hard decision to trade a guy like that. But in the same sense, I thought if you looked at our ball club a year ago and said, what happened? Why didn't the Seattle Mariners win the division? I think it was because of lack of pitching. It got to the point where when you get to the very beginning of the season, you have the things that happened to us. Taiwan Walker not ready to pitch.
Iwakuma
out for a month. James Paxton on the shelf right off, you know, after he's through a few games. Now you get to the end of the year, Elias can't pitch until the month of September for the most part. Chris Young basically shut down. There were times our bullpen was starting. We were bringing up guys from AAA. If we'd been able to solidify the staff where we had guys stay healthy just for a shorter period of time, we're in the playoffs. So I think you can never look by it, and I think our number one goal this year was add a big bat, number one. Number two goal was add a starting pitcher. The fact that you can get a veteran left-handed starting pitcher says an awful lot. And I think with J-Hap, our guys that watched him last year were very excited about his second half of the season. He pitched great against us in Toronto. You know, he's mature. He was a very, very good athlete. Right at the point in time, pitched in two hitter ballparks, Philadelphia, Toronto. Now he comes to this ballpark with our defense. We think that, you know, it's going to be a really nice fit.
I think maybe you have a hit or two, and I'd like you to talk about Mike Zunino a little bit. We've all talked about the pluses to Mike, but what are some of the things he needs to do to move forward and take that next step? We saw it with Kyle 3 years ago and Mike finishing his first full season. Where do you see him at, and what does he need to do?
Well, I think they want to work a little bit in the spring with his swing path. You know, I think that Mike swung and missed a lot last year. You know, it's over-anxious for any young hitter, but I think Mike kind of got out of, you know, chased pitches out of the zone. I think he needs to become more patient as a hitter. They want to take this little flaw he's got in his swing, a little hitch in his start right there, to kind of try to get that out of it. They're going to work on that. Now, as a game caller, he's just going to get better just because of experience, you know, and as a framer, he's already one of the top in the game, you know, and as a guy that has that blocks balls and is pretty mobile, pretty strong, pretty good throwing arm, all of those things just get better simply because you're more mature, you're in the big leagues longer. But, you know, I think that the consistency at the plate is going to be something important for him. He's 23 years of age.
Can't teach the power that he has.
23.
22 home runs.
Yeah, and Lloyd said to me a funny line. He goes, I guarantee you, as we walk through Mike Zunino's career, he's going to hit a ballpark. He's going to hit a baseball that's going to literally leave this ballpark. Mm-hmm. It's going to end out on the street out there.
Yeah.
And he's shown that, you know, we've seen him hit balls so far. So I think with Mike, he's got all the core ingredients to be a pretty special player. Leadership skills, ability to run a pitching staff. Hey, our pitching staff, if you look at our staff and say your bullpen was the best in baseball until the very end, your starting staff was the best, certainly one of the top three in baseball, 23-year-old kid caught that staff.
Yeah.
You know, and it's no easy tour right there. So, you know, kudos to him and what he's done.
Well, Jack, I tell you what, congratulations on what you and everybody in the front office has done over the last few weeks. It's going to be a fun season in 2015, and I can't wait for spring training, buddy.
I tell you, Rick, you know, one of the really fun things is to sit back and reward our fans. You know, they've been patient. You know, they've stuck with us. It's been tough on them, and, you know, and it's been tough on me, quite frankly. But, you know, to watch the enjoyment at the end of last year, to watch them see this thing begin to come to what we talked about, and now to be able to add some pieces that could make 2015 a very exciting season, it's for them. We do it because we want them to feel great about this ball club, about their Seattle Mariners. So thank you to them.
So there it is. First one in the books. Expect the next one fairly soon. Some topics to get to, and topics I'm pretty excited to talk about. So a lot of stuff upcoming. Glad you're here. Thanks for being here. Talk to you soon.